Good afternoon, everybody. This is Shmuel Plotzker. Thank God I'm back, live, coming at you live from Cincinnati, Ohio, Gulf Manor Synagogue and our School of Jewish Studies. We're awfully excited to have this class today. Thank God, last week I was on the road driving like crazy to a wedding in New York and then on to Camp Sternberg in Narrowsburg, New York. Wow, it was 1,700 miles. What a road trip. I felt like I was behind the wheel every second. But thank God we're back, and we're delighted to be able to meet with you and continue our study of Eim Habonim Smeicha. Hope you had a wonderful Tu B'Av and a beautiful and meaningful Shabbos Nachamu. Haven't spoken to you really since before Tisha B'Av, so I hope your fast was uplifting and meaningful, and that you've been enjoying yourself since, and that all the tshuva that you did is putting you in good stead with the Almighty. And let's hope and pray that we all do tshuva. That's our job. We've got to all come back to the Almighty and His loving ways. I'm in the book now. Let's get right into it. Page 302. We've cracked page 300. Very exciting. So I'm on page 302. And the chapter is continuing to be chapter 3 on settlement and rebuilding. And let's get started. This is a little bit Talmudical, this upcoming subsection. I hope that we'll do some of it justice. I really do hope so. Hope I can do that. But before we get right into it, I just want to just reminisce for a second. I had a chance to go back and daven in one of my old favorite shuls up in the Catskills in Laksheldrake. Those of you who know the Laksheldrake Synagogue know how beautiful it is. It's a little jewel in the middle of a very, very forgotten kind of a hamlet. Laksheldrake was always kind of quiet, and it remains so. But that shul has been going on since 1922. And therefore, it's very much a part of my heart. And when I was a little boy, an older man named Julius would pick me up from my, from where we were staying. My parents were renting a bungalow in a small, small little bungalow colony. I mean, super small. And he'd pick me up, and I'd go in the car. We had a big, beautiful Cadillac, I think. And he took me to the shul, and I had like a minyan. I was a bar mitzvah boy by then. And I had just the fondest memories. And there was a picture of him holding a Sefer Torah at what looked like a Hachnasa Sefer Torah. And I took a picture of it, so now I've got a picture of the picture, of the photograph. And it was very meaningful to me, and went back there, and it wasn't the first time back in all these years, but it was the most recent being back. And truth be told, I'm not sure if I was back there a few years ago when we were running around the Catskills. Could be it was not open at that time, maybe because of the daylight or whatever it was. I mean, there was in morning and afternoon, and maybe it was right at noontime when we were there and it was closed. At all events, it was a beautiful walk down memory lane for me. And we dived Mincha and Marv over there, and I brought my little girl in so she could see the shul, and took her to camp the next day. And very, very beautiful memories were coming back, and driving around that area is like a tonic for me. So I always look for a reason to go back to the Catskills. I go back in my mind, like those songs go, the country songs, the West Country Western songs these days are very filled with people reminiscing about their childhood. And thank God I had a very, very good childhood, and I look back with great fondness on it. And Blake Shelton's song about going back in his mind and going back for a visit because he likes it, he wants to do that, very much it touches me and speaks to me. Okay, so here we are on page 302. I hope your summer's going well. Here we go. The words, you'll see it says in the left-hand column, in bold, the preeminence of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And this is chapter Lamed Beis, 32. So we really are moving through this. He writes, the words of our godly mentor and master, the Chassam Sofer, whose teachings and halachic decisions radiate daily in study halls throughout the world, demonstrate the magnitude of our obligation to work the soil of our Holy Land, a mitzvah which surpasses almost all others. Now watch this unusual Gemara that he's going to choose. Gemara in Sukkah 36a. Here we go. And then he's going to quote the Talmud. Here we go. The master in the Mishnah said, quote, a kushit esrog, an esrog kushis, is pasul, unfit for use. Can't use it for the ritual of taking the lulav and the esrog. And it's from the tilas lulav, when you join lulav, esrog, hadassim, aravis, and you hold them all together in your hands, you make the bracha, and then you do some miniature na'anun, and you do some shaking, and you lift it up, and so on, and you'd be no-tell the lulav and the esrog. So you can't use a black esrog for that. According to the Mishnah, that is pasul. It's simply unfit for that mitzvah. Asks the Talmud, wait a second. But didn't we learn in a brisa, quote, a kushis esrog is yes indeed fit and kosher for use, while one that is similar to a kushis, one that is looking a little bit like it, but not quite 100% black, but it approximates it a little bit. Now that's pasul, according to the brisa. But an out-and-out black one, that is okay to use. Well, now you got me totally confused. Because in the Mishnah it says that a black one is pasul. And in the brisa it says the black one is kosher. So nu, which is it? Abaye answers, our Mishnah, which says that a black esrog is pasul, unfit for use, says Abaye, our Mishnah is also referring to one that is similar to a kushis. And in the brisa, something that's similar to a kushis is pasul. The brisa says that if it's similar to a black esrog, well then it's not allowed to be used. And so Abaye is saying that our Mishnah, which talks about a full-blown black esrog and says that it's unfit for use, according to Abaye, it's also referring to the one in the brisa, which is similar to a kushi. So according to Abaye, a full-blown black esrog and something that's similar to it, both are pasul. Excuse me, both are unable to be used, unfit. Rava answers, there's no contradiction between the Mishnah and the brisa, which is talking about a black esrog, and one says unfit and one says kosher. He says as follows. The brisa, which says that the black esrog is kosher, that's referring to us here in Babylonia. And the one, the Mishnah, that's talking about how a black esrog being unfit, that's referring to those people in the land of Israel. Well, that's really something. The brisa is talking to us here in Babylonia, where a black esrog is kosher indeed for usage, and the Mishnah are talking about the same exact item and declaring it unfit for use. Well, that Mishnah is talking about referring to people in Israel. Well, this is really going to require some explanation. So let's see what we can do. Bottom of page 302. The Chasam Sofer comments as follows. Quote, our Mishnah refers to one that is similar to a kushis. The Talmud, the Chasam Sofer quotes those words and says the Talmud concludes the dispute between Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and Rabbi Shmuel And that's a Gemara in Brachos 35b. And here the footnote, now I'm on the top of 303, by the way. And the footnote sends us to the bottom of 303, where it says as follows. Rav Shimon bar Yochai asks, if a person plows during the plowing season and sows during the sowing season, what will become of the Torah? He'll be so busy doing agricultural errands day in and day out his entire life, he'll never learn anything. Therefore, he holds that a person should learn Torah, and others will do his work. Rabbi Shmuel holds that a person should act in the way of the world. As it is written, you shall gather your grain, the asafta the ganecha. You shall gather your grain. It's in the Shema. And that, of course, is a quote of Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 14. In other words, he should plow during the plowing season, sow during the sowing season, and when he is free from work, he should study Torah. The Talmud concludes that many acted under Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, but were not successful, while those who acted under Rabbi Shmuel, they did indeed succeed. Okay, so now we have something of a template for this argument. We go back to the Chassam Sofer. Again, quote, our Mishnah refers to one that is similar to a Kushis. Similar to a Kushis. The Talmud concludes the dispute between Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and Rabbi Yishmael with the following statement. Many acted like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, but were unsuccessful. End quote from that Gemara in Brachos. Writes the Chassam Sofer, excuse me, I heard from my master and teacher, the Haflah, that this means that they acted like Rabbi Shimon, but were not truly Rabbi Shimon. Does that sound a little bit like the language in our Gemara, in Sukkah? Well, yes, it should. It should remind us of that, of something or somebody that's acting like something, but not really truly indeed being that something. And maybe that's going to be a reference to an esrog, a black esrog. Is it really a black esrog, or is this merely resembling a black esrog? Okay. He writes, so writes the Haflah that they acted like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, but were not really Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. And in the footnote over there, it says, that is to say they made themselves out to be Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, but we're not really in this category. He writes, the Chassam Sofer writes, for someone who acts for the sake of Hashem, the one who examines his thoughts and knows his plans, he will certainly succeed. Somebody who acts the Shem Shemayim will surely succeed. However, they acted like Rabbi Shimon. They were similar to him, but did not possess his true qualities. Therefore, those people were unsuccessful. They acted like him, but were not really truly him. Tafla explains that this is the meaning of a Kushit Esrog. It represents a tzaddik whose ways are different. Just like the skin of a black man is different. Such a tzaddik is kosher. However, quote, one that is similar to a Kushis, that is, somebody who wants to compare himself to Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, he is unfit, unsuccessful, he is pasul, for he will not succeed. If he's like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, he's not going to make it, because he's not Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. This concludes the words of the teacher of the Chassam Sofer. What follows is an addition of his insignificant disciple. In my humble opinion, writes Rabbi Tarchtal, Rabbi Shmuel only applies the verse, you shall gather your grain in Eretz Yisrael. Okay? When the majority, when does he apply that verse? When the majority of Israel is dwelling in the land of Israel. For then, the very act of tilling the land fulfills the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The very act of tilling the land fulfills the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Okay? And it brings forth Israel's sacred fruits. Thus, the Torah commands, you shall gather your grain, v'yaseftah v'ganecha. Okay? Also, Boaz, the pasuk which says in Ruth chapter 3, verse 2, Boaz winnows his dare, the pasuk is, this is, of course, Naomi talking to Ruth, and she says, listen, go to Boaz. Quote, Boaz winnows barley tonight on the threshing floor. End quote. A verse in the book of Ruth, chapter 3, verse 2. Boaz is winnowing his barley. Why is that? Because of the mitzvah. The mitzvah of the very act of tilling the land brings forth the, fulfills the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael and brings forth its fruits. So that's why Boaz was winnowing barley. He wanted to make the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, according to this. You do that not just by standing in Israel and breathing, but rather by doing some agricultural work. You do a little plowing and sowing and things like that, and you are suddenly considered building up the land, because that's how people did it, you know, a long time ago. So Boaz winnowing barley tonight on the threshing floor. Why? Answers Rabbi Taichta, because of the mitzvah. Here he puts in bold, or the editors put in bold. It's like saying, I will not don tefillin because I am studying Torah. So too, it's amazing for somebody to even say that, but Karaites do indeed say that. Karaite Jews do not put on tefillin. They say it's just simply a figure of speech, writing it upon your arms, inscribing it upon your heart. Things like that are merely figures of speech for the Karaite Jewish community. So again, it's like saying, I won't put on tefillin because I'm studying Torah. Okay? So too, one must not say, quote, I will not gather my grain because I'm studying Torah. Again, people say, I'm not going to put on tefillin because I'm studying Torah. Who talks like that? Everybody puts on tefillin, even if you do study Torah around the clock. Everybody puts on tefillin. You don't get an out just because you're studying Torah. Nuts. So too, one must not say, I will gather my grain because I'm studying Torah. Okay, furthermore, it is possible, yes, indeed, yes, possible, that other trades which involve social welfare are also included in the mitzvah. So Rabbi Taichta is saying that it's not just agricultural, but rather other mitzvahs which involve social welfare should also be included, l'chora, on the surface, it should also be included in the grand and great mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. If you're doing that in Israel and you are improving social welfare, you're improving the lives of poor people, so then by all means, that is, according to this, it's a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, of settling the land of Israel. Bottom page 303. However, when we are scattered among the nations of the world due to our numerous sins, the more the world develops, the more divine service deteriorates. The more the world develops, the more divine service deteriorates. See Shuvas Chassam Sofer, Yeridea 138. See the Shla, the Shneiluchos Abris, Hilchos Sukkah, at the end, chapter 2, 78b. Then Rabbi Shmuel agrees with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, in a scenario where, because of our numerous sins and we're scattered among the nations, the more the world develops, the more divine service deteriorates and goes down. So then Rabbi Shmuel agrees with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai that one should only study Torah and not engage in social welfare because things are deteriorating. We in exile rely on Rabbi Nahurai, who says, and it's a Shweki song, I leave aside all the trades in the world, and I teach my son only Torah. May niach ani, what's the term, mitzor shel ha'olam, or something like that. Ve'eini milamed b'ni ela Torah. I can actually sing it for you, but you really would not want that. Although I can carry a tune. But all that's a Shweki song, and that is a Gemara in Kedushin. Famous Gemara in Kedushin, talking about all kinds of fascinating things. And over here in Kedushin 82a, Rabbi Nahurai says, I leave aside all trades in the world, and I teach my son only Torah. Okay. This is how outside the land. This is true outside the land, as explained above, where according to this, as the world develops and divine service deteriorates, even Rabbi Shmuel, who said, no, you should plant your cotton and you should harvest things and so on, even he would tell Rabbi Meir is right, because as the divine service deteriorates and the world develops, our job, according to Rabbi Shmuel, is to only study Torah, not engage in social welfare. Okay. We continue on page 304. These words are utterly astounding. I'm so sorry. I skipped a paragraph. Forgive me. Let's go back up one paragraph, and we'll get to something of a punchline, and then everybody talks out, we'll explain more. So he writes, and this is the Chassam Sofer continuing, this is what Rava teaches regarding a Kushit Esrog, even if it's not merely similar, but a real Kushit Esrog, meaning Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's true adherence. So even if it's not similar, but rather a real Kushit, then nonetheless, the Braisa refers to us in Bavel, and the Mishnah refers to them in Israel. What does that mean? I'll flesh it out. That is to say, for the inhabitants of Babylonia, it is fitting to act on Shimon Bar Yochai and only study Torah. But for the inhabitants of the land of Israel, but for the inhabitants of Israel, it is possible, because the people of Israel need to settle the land of Israel. Fascinating. Again, for the inhabitants of Chutz La'aretz, outside Israel, it's fitting to act on Rishon Bar Yochai, only study Torah. But if you're going to be an inhabitant of the land of Israel, then for you, buddy, it's not all Torah all the time. Rather, you've got to plow the fields. You've got to help settle the land. Incredible thing. It's certainly not what the Haredim in Israel do today or recommend to be done. These words, Rabbi Tachtel writes, are utterly astounding. Our mentor, the Chassam Sofer, values the work of settling the land so much that he forbids the inhabitants of the land of Israel to act on Rabbi Nahurai and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who advocate studying Torah exclusively while neglecting the land. But the Chassam Sofer values the work of settling the land. Okay? Again, our mentor, Chassam Sofer, values the work of settling the land so much that he forbids the inhabitants of Israel to act on Rabbi Nahurai and Rabbi Shimon. I remember those two rabbis advocated just Torah study all the time. Says the Chassam Sofer, absolutely not. Not while you're living in Israel. You're not going to learn Torah 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Instead, we must act like Rabbi Shmuel and engage Yeshiva Tzitzar. Okay? We should, instead, act like Rabbi Shmuel and engage in settling the land of Israel, because it is a mitzvah to do so. He even compares somebody who neglects this mitzvah to someone who says, I'm not going to put on tefillin. Wow, that is fighting words, because the fact is that what's happened in Israel, we all know, is that the Haredim in Israel take the Rishon Bar Yochai approach, and they only train each other to learn Torah and therefore it's intergenerational. And while I'm all in favor of Lima Torah, it's what we're doing here, at the same time, one ought not be a burden to the state, no matter where he lives. And if you don't have any skill set, if you don't know how to get a job, or you don't, can't, you don't have any skills, or you're not an entrepreneur and open up your own business, and there's work to be done, there's things to be done, and businesses to be created. But if you're not, what can I say? If you don't have those skills, you have no skills, but you got to do something. Okay? This, now he continues. This is the ruling of one of the greatest poskim of the later generations, our mentor, Chassam Sofer, whose decisions have been accepted like the Torah at Mount Sinai. From getting the Torah from God. Who then is so noble or arrogant to degrade what our mentor, the Chassam Sofer, values so highly? He even compares working the land to the daily positive commandments of donning up, donning tefillin. That is remarkable. I mean, playing around with dirt and a piece of land is equivalent to putting on tefillin. One never knows how this goes down. But it's amazing. Without the mitzvah of tefillin, a Jew is simply not a Jew, he writes. And he then descends to purgatory and does not rise over there. See Gemara Rosh Hashanah 17:8. Therefore, those who degrade the positive commandment of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael using fabricated and shaky proofs should be utterly ashamed. Their words are null and void in comparison to those of our mentor, the Chassam Sofer, and we may disregard them completely. You got nothing to say in Rabbi Tachdahl's universe unless it's very, very pro the land of Israel and pro settlement of the land of Israel. I guess he might be saying that the Mooncatcher is opposing Yishuv of Eretz Yisrael because of those people who are there right there and stand to make a government and whatever and create a country which he was, you know, violently opposed to. So, for the Chassam Sofer, settling the land of Israel means tilling the soil. And that applies to people who live in Israel. Not exactly a Hasidish Shechita, a Haredish Shechita. Boy, you got to be careful when you're half drunk and exhausted still from the whole week. There's quite a difference between a Hasidish Shechita and a Haredish Shechita. The difference is a Hasidish Shechita is kosher slaughter according to Hasidic tradition, and a Haredi Shechita means an ultra-violent whatever. We're going to continue. Hasidic Shechita, Haredi Shechita, a position, an ultra-Orthodox position, a philosophical stance. It's quite a difference. Top of page 305, the importance of working the land. He quotes the following midrash. Rabbi Yehuda ben Shimon began, excuse me, you shall follow God your God and cling to him. A pasuk in Devarim, chapter 13, verse 5. Is it possible, says the Mish, asks the midrash, is it possible for flesh and blood to follow the Almighty? Rather, say like this. At the beginning of creation, the Almighty engaged in planting. As it is written, God planted a garden in Eden. Genesis chapter 2, verse 8. Similarly, when you enter the land, engage in planting first. As it is written, quote, when you shall come into the land and you shall plant. A pasuk in Leviticus, in Vayikra chapter 19, verse 23. So all that is in Vayikra Rabbah, chapter 25, Ketzah 3. All right. Cling to God. Who placed wisdom, Batuchot, and that's in Eev, in Job, chapter 38, verse 36? The question is, the Midrash is continuing, In subsection 5 of chapter 25 in the Midrash, who placed wisdom batuchot, literally in the innards? What is batuchot? What is that? So he says, batavya, in the tavya. Boy, that's helping out a lot. What does that word mean? So the Matnos Kahuna explains that this is a type of bird. Who gave the Sechvi understanding? Also a pasuk in, now will that be also in Eiv? Who gave the Sechvi understanding? And we say that in one of the open, maybe the, that is the opening bracha. You, God, are the one who gave to the Sechvi in understanding to determine between lightness and darkness. Okay. Who gave the Sechvi understanding? So what's a Sechvi? That's a hen. Okay, so you got a tavya, a type of bird, and the sechvi were told this is a hen. Rabbi Levi said in Arabic the hen is called sechvi. All right. Rabbi Levi says in Arabic the hen is called sechvi. When the hen's chicks are small, she gathers them under her wings and keeps them warm. Okay. When the hen's chicks are small, she gathers them under her wings and keeps them warm. She digs and pecks in the refuse to find food for them. But when they are big, if one of them wants to get close to her, she pecks at its head with her beak and she says, "Go and dig in the refuse." So too, when the people of Israel were in the desert for 40 years, the manna came down from heaven. The well came up for them. Quails were available to them. The clouds of glory surrounded them. Okay. Go and dig in the refuse. So too, when the people of Israel were in the desert for 40 years, the manna came down from heaven. The well came up for them. Quails were available to them. The clouds of glory surrounded them. And the pillar of cloud traveled before them. But when they entered the land, Moshe said to them, "Every one of you shall take up his spade and plant trees." That's shot in the pasuk. That's the meaning of it. When it says, when you come into the land and you will plant. Moshe's saying, when you come into Israel, you're going to plant. You're not going to keep on getting mun. The mun is for the desert. Mun is special. Quails are, you know, for breakfast and for dinner. That's unusual. You don't get that every single day. Don't be silly. When you enter the land of Israel, you're going to work. You're going to work for your bread. Thus Moshe commanded Israel to plant immediately upon entering the land. Pasuk in Devarim, chapter 10, verse 9, "Therefore, Levi has no portion nor inheritance with his brethren. God is his inheritance." Now that's a pasuk in Deuteronomy, chapter 10, verse 9. Devarim 10, 9. "Levi has no portion or inheritance with his brothers. God is his inheritance." Rashi explains, they were set aside, meaning the Shevet Levi. The Levites were set aside for the service of the altar and were therefore not free to plow and sow. End quote. Sifsei Chachamim comments that Rashi does not mean to say that tilling the soil is degrading for the servants of God. Rather, he means that they have no time to do so. Midrash Tanchuma states, "When you shall come into the land, and you shall plant, the Holy One, blessed be He, said to Israel, Even though you find the land filled with everything good, do not say, quote, we will refrain from planting. Do not say that you're going to refrain from planting. Rather, be sure to plant. As it says, you shall plant all types of fruit trees. Just as you entered and found trees that other people planted, so too, you should plant for your children. Well, that sounds like Chone Ma'agel, doesn't it? He meets a man, he says, what are you doing? The man says, I'm planting trees. He says, you're planting trees? You look like an older guy. How are you supposed to enjoy those trees? He says, I probably won't, but my children will, my grandchildren will, their descendants will. I got a plan for them, just like people planted for me. When I entered the world, I got a plan for my own children and family. It's a beautiful thought. It seems to be running around over here in the rabbinic literature, this idea that you're planting on behalf of children. All right. Just as you entered and found trees that other people planted, so too you should plant for your children. A person should not say, I'm old. How many years am I going to live? Why should I toil for others? Therefore, even if a person is old, he should add plants to those that he found. Good. Even if a person is old, he should add plants to those that he found. God said to Israel, learn from me. Do I need plants? Nevertheless, the pasuk says that God planted a garden in Egypt, in Eden, not in Egypt. There is a Kagan Hashem Keretz Mitzrayim, that's true. But over here in the very, very beginning of Bereishis, God is focusing in on the Garden of Eden, the Gan Eden. And over there, pasuk says in Bereishis, Genesis chapter 2, verse 8, says Hashem planted a garden in Eden. And Hashem says, I need a garden. I need a garden? I need a bunch of trees? You know who I am? I'm God. I'm up in heaven. What are you talking about? I need a bunch of trees. Come on, be honest here. I mean, I don't need trees. No, still in all, he planted the trees for human beings who are looking for whatever. Here we go. The Midrash comments, I'm on page 306. The Midrash comments on the verse, do not go down to Egypt. Dwell in the land. Bereishis 26:2. Didn't look it up, but that might be what God is saying to Yitzchak. Don't leave Israel. Don't go down to Egypt. Dwell in the land. So the measures on that pasuk says, don't go down to Egypt. Rather, shchon, dwell in the land. Make a settlement. Make a shchunah. Make a settlement in the land of Israel, plant, sow, and graft trees. So it says in Bereishis Rabbah, you got that, okay? That's what it says in Bereishis Rabbah 64:3. The Midrash Tanchuma cites the same idea on David's statement, trust in God and do good. Dwell in the land. And find sustenance faithfully. That's a pasuk in Tehillim, chapter 37, capital 3. I'm sorry, pasuk 3. Chapter, capital, Tehillim, Psalm 37, verse 3. Okay, so dwell in the land, the verb dwell, shchon, has the letters shin chaf nun. Just like it said earlier, dwell in the land, don't go down to Egypt, dwell in the land. The Midrash had said, make a settlement, make a shchuna, using those letters, shin, chaf, nun. Shchon in the land, that is, make a shchuna, make a neighborhood, a settlement in the land of Israel. Plant, sow, and graft trees. The Midrash Tanchuma cites the same idea, I'm just reviewing a little bit, same idea on David's statement, trust in God, do well, dwell in the land, and find sustenance faithfully. Okay? Dwell in the land, shchon, baretz, make a settlement of land. Says shchon in the land, dwell in the land. That is, make a settlement, make a shchon on the land, sow and plant, and find sustenance faithfully. That is, re'ei. Excuse me. Wow. Find sustenance, spelled vav, resh, ayin, hey. And the midrash is darshining that. See from the letters resh, ayin, hey. Resh, aleph, hey, rather. They replaced an ayin with an aleph. See the faithfulness of the patriarchs. That's midrash Tanchuma on Pashas Re'ei, chapter 11. Both of these midrashim also interpret, shchon in the land, dwell in the land. What does it mean? Cause the shchatim, cause of the shchina to dwell. Shchon ha-shchina. Cause the shchina to dwell in the land. The commentators explain that if the sowing and the planting are done faithfully and in the spirit of the Torah, the Shekhinah will dwell in the land. Okay? See the Eitz Yosef and Midrash Tanchuma. Okay. Beautiful. Sowing, planting, when done faithfully, are part and parcel of living in the land and getting the mitzvah of dwelling in the land of Israel, the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Okay, the importance of studying and supporting Torah, bottom of page 306. This is also the meaning of another midrash on the verse, when you shall come into the land and you shall plant all types of food trees. Excuse me, as you know, that's referring to Vayikra, chapter 19, verse 23. The Torah is a tree of life to those who uphold it. Eitz Chaim He, dude. Name that movie, The Big Lebowski. Eitz Chaim He, dude. That is one of the funniest lines you'll find. I mean, the movie is chock full of great funny lines. But, man, Eitz Chaim He, dude. And I don't roll on Shabbos. I mean, this is a movie for all time over here. This is the kind of movie you show a high school kid who's trying to get up the straight and narrow. You show him The Big Lebowski. Of course, you got to edit a little bit. But then you let him see how important Shabbos is to Walter, and maybe Shabbos will become important to him. Who knows? Maybe we're just not showing the right movies to our kids. Maybe we should just start showing, you know, well-edited versions of The Big Lebowski to keep kids on the quote-unquote derech. At all events, funny, funny film. Here we go. Eitz Chaim He, dude, l'machazikim ba. It is a tree of life to those who uphold it. This, of course, is Proverbs, Mishlei, chapter 3, verse 18. Rabbi Chuna said, in the name of Binyamin ben Levi, quote, This is analogous. Boy, am I tired or what? This room is hot. This is analogous to a king who told his son to travel for business. The son responded, Father, I'm afraid of robbers on the highway and pirates at sea. What did the father do? He took a staff, carved it, placed an amulet on it, and said to his son, keep this stick in your hand, and you will not fear any other being. Top of 307. So too, the Almighty said to Moshe, say to Israel, my children, my sons, engage in Torah, and you will not fear any other nation. Okay. Had the Pasuk said, it's a tree of life to those who toil in it, well, then Israel would not have been able to endure. But rather, the pasuk says, "Eitz Chaim He l'machazikim ba." A machzik is somebody who strengthens something. He's making something chazak. That verb l'machazik, of course, is in the hifya, in the causative binyan paradigm. You're causing something to be strong, You're fortifying it. You're strengthening it. That kind of thing. Lachzik, to make something strong. And it's come to mean to support somebody, you know, to be a financial supporter. Here we go. Had the pasuk said, it's a tree of life to those who toil in it, Israel would not have been able to endure. How many people can toil in it? How many people are cut out for nonstop Torah study to the exclusion of everything else? Even in Israel, they're finding that's very, very challenging to prescribe the kolel life to every single little boy who's ever been born over the past 40, 50 years. It's not so pashut. It just isn't. These guys take jobs. They move on. They do whatever it is that they do. At all events, it would have been tough for us had the pasuk said, it's chayim he, to those who toil in it, to be osek, to toil in it, it's chayim he, laoske, haoskim bo, to those who toil in it, the tree of life. That would have been very challenging for the nation of Israel. He writes, Israel would not have been able to endure. Instead, it says, lamachazikim bo, to those who uphold, who strengthen it, similarly, and so therefore you're able to do that. You can write a check, you'd be part and parcel of the nation. Similarly, had the pasuk said, cursed is he who does not learn, Israel would not have been able to endure. Instead it says, cursed is the one who does not maintain the words of this Torah. Okay? For to be in the shelter of wisdom is to be in the shelter of money. So it says in Koheles, Ecclesiastes chapter 12, so chapter 7, verse 12. For to be in the shelter of wisdom is to be in the shelter of money. Rabbi Chunin and Rabbi Yirmiyah said the name of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, in the future, the Holy One will make shelters and canopies in Gan Eden, in the Garden of Eden, for people who do mitzvahs, meaning for wealthy individuals who sustain the Torah with their money. And he will place them alongside the people who study Torah. There are three psukim which indicate that quote. Let me just get on over here. In the future, Hashem is going to make shelters and canopies in Gan Eden for people who do mitzvos. Meaning over there, at least over here, they're saying that the meaning is for wealthy individuals who sustain the Torah with their money. I would not have thought that that's a translation of doing mitzvos. I would have thought doing mitzvos means, I don't know, keeping Shabbos, keeping Yontif, giving tzedakah, putting on tefillin, keeping kosher, putting up a ma'aka around your roof so people don't fall off, sitting in a sukkah, taking a little of an esrig, eating korban pesach, we can't do that right now, eating matzah, drinking, you know, this is what I would have thought. You know, being honest, things like that. I never would have thought that this phrase, people who do mitzvahs, is defined by the phrase, wealthy individuals who sustain the Torah with their money. I wouldn't have thought that. Okay, but all right, these people who make shelters and canopies in the land of Israel. Okay. Well, he will place them alongside the people who study the Torah. So people who sustain the Torah, will place them alongside those who study the Torah. There are three psukim which indicate this kind of treatment. That if you're a career kollel guy, well, then, good. And if you're the kind of person who wants to support the career kollel guy, also good. There's a funny little joke, I think I may have told this to you, about the guy who says to Rabbi Aaron Kuffer, Zatzal, he says, Rabbi, let me get this straight. You just said that if I support Torah, I can go watch football all day and I'm going to still get a lit up reward up in heaven? Are you for real? So the rabbi says, yeah, that's exactly what I said. That's exactly what's going to happen to you. If you support Torah study, you will get a lichtige Gan Eden. You're going to get a lit up paradise. You're going to get a great reward. So the guy says to Rabbi Kuffer, he says, so if that's true, well, I'm going to just watch football all day long. And I'm going to look forward very much to my lit up paradise. So Rabbi Kuffer says, great, of course you're going to get a lit up paradise. Nobody's denying that. God is very generous. He'll give you a lit up paradise. But what about your Olam Hazeh? Of course you're going to get a great Olam Haba. Nobody's saying no to that. But what's going to be with your Olam Hazeh? You're not learning Torah right here and now, so what's going to come of you? What'll be with you? There are three psukim which indicate that those who support Torah study will be placed alongside those who study the Torah. Here are the psukim. The one that we just quoted, Ecclesiastes 7, verse 12. For to be in the shelter of wisdom is to be in the shelter of money. Verse 2. Fortunate is the man who does this. That was Yirmiyah. Fortunate is the man who does this. That's Isaiah chapter 56, verse 2. And finally, it's Chaim Hi L'machazikim Ba. It is a tree of life to those who uphold it, who sustain it, who firm it up and make it strong. It is a tree of life to those people. So there are your three verses which prove up that somebody who supports Torah study will be given a wondrous reward, and he'll be alongside the people who study the Torah. Again, one, for to be in the shelter of wisdom is to be in the shelter of money. Two, fortunate is the man who does this. Three, it is a tree of life to those who uphold it. Rav Shimon said, and Lachar in the name of his brother Azariah. The Midrash asks, no, was Shimon not greater than Azariah? So why did he quote Azariah? The answer is, since Azariah engaged in business and provided Shimon with food, the halacha was attributed to Shimon. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. It was attributed to Azariah. Shimon said halacha in the name of his brother Azariah. So the Midrash says, well, he was greater than Azariah, so why is he quoting Azariah? Answer, since Azariah engaged in business and provided Shimon with food, the halacha is attributed to Azariah, the merchant, the businessman. Similarly, quote, and of Zevulun he said, Smach Zevulun b'tzei secha, yisachar b'olacha, rejoice Zevulun in your journeys, yisachar in your tents. A famous pasuk that we sing, we say, Hizdosa bracha at the end of the Torah, in Deuteronomy chapter 33, verse 18. Nu, was Yisachar not greater than Zvolun? Well, in Torah knowledge he was, because he was sitting constantly in the tents learning Torah. And Zvolun is off on the high seas making a buck. So is Yisachar not greater than Zvolun? Yes, he's greater in Torah knowledge. So that arguably would make him greater. But the answer is Yisachar gave Zvolun part of his reward for toiling in Torah, because Zvulun went off on business far from civilization and made money and provided Yisachar with food. Therefore, the verse begins with his name. As it says, Smach Zvulun b'tzei secha, rejoice Zvulun in your journeys. And only later comes the Torah scholar Yisachar in his tent. Excuse me. So the rabbi see in this, in the way that God places the pasuk, that first comes the businessman, and we accord him great respect, because imen kemach ein Torah, buddy. Let's face facts over here. If there's no checks rolling in on a regular basis, I don't have a shul. And if your checks don't roll in on a regular basis, there's no kolo, and there's no kolo life, unless there are people who are very wealthy who want to make it their business to make sure that we've got the Torah being studied around the clock, throughout the world. That's why we have wealthy people giving money. Otherwise, you'd have absolutely, positively no Torah study going on. Who would be able to afford to do it? They got to have their bills paid too. And they got to have their food on the table and raise their children. So thank you to all those merchants, businessmen, professionals, whoever you are, and even Torah scholars themselves give money to other to tzedakahs that support Torah scholars. We all are in this together. Rabbi Tanchum said, quote, anyone who goes off on a journey without preparing himself for war will eventually fall in war, except for the tribe of Zevulun. Whether they prepare or not prepare, they go out to war and win. As it is written, of Zvulun, those who go out to the army, experts in war, 50,000. And who set themselves in array without a heart and a heart, without a heart and a heart? You got to look that up. It's in First Chronicles, Divrei Yamim Aleph, chapter 12, verse 34. So again, whether they prepare or not, Zebulun goes out to war and they win. As it's written, regarding Zebulun, those who go out to the army, experts in war, 50,000, and who set themselves in array without a heart and a heart. What's the meaning of without a heart and a heart, asks the Baker Rabba, the Midrash? That is, whether they prepare or not, they go out and win. Okay, and they set themselves in array, whether they prepared or they didn't prepare, without a heart and a heart, doesn't matter what's going on, they are going to vanquish people in war. Fascinating. Okay, where are we holding over here? I got to get my watch fixed. I got 3 minutes left. We now turn to the top of page 308, where it says we need both Torah scholars and workers. So now we're getting to a juicy part. He writes, apparently these different expositions of the pasuk, quote, when you shall come into the land, end quote, they seemingly contradict each other. At first, Chazal explained that Moshe told Israel to plant, to hoe, and grow trees when they enter Israel. Afterwards, they explained that Israel should engage in Torah. Okay. When you shall come into the land, Chazal explained Moshe told Israel to plant and grow trees when they enter Israel. No, afterwards, they explained that Israel should engage in Torah. So what is it? Should you be learning Torah or engage in planting? It must be that Chazal wanted to teach us that both are necessary. The land needs yeshiva students who study Torah, as well as people who work the ground. And they must strengthen each other. Thus, Chazal explained that they had the verse said, it is a tree of life to those who dwell toil in it, or cursed is he who does not learn, Israel would not have been able to endure. Chazal had not explained the psukim this way. Instead, it says, to those who uphold it and who does not maintain, to teach that some people will learn and some will till the ground. Some are going to be studying Torah full time, some are going to be supporting them full time. But everything must be done in the spirit of the Torah. Then the workers will succeed and win their wars, like Zebulun and Yisachar. One more paragraph. Similarly, the Talmud states that had David not sat in yeshiva and learned Torah, Yoav and Tzeruiah would not have been victorious in war. And had Yoav not gone out to war, David would not have been able to sit in yeshiva and learn Torah. Gemara in Sanhedrin 49:8. I think we saw that in our Tanakh class. The same is true today. If there are no yeshiva students, the pioneers, the chalutzim, will not succeed in tilling the land. And if there are no laborers, the yeshiva students will not be able to sit and learn. Each group must complement the other, and then everyone will succeed. Accordingly, David said, half of them will go off to war, and half will remain with the supplies. Perhaps a reference to Pasuk in First Shmuel Aleph, 1 Samuel chapter 30, verse 24. Half of them will go off to war. Half will remain with the supplies. The Midrash says that we are unable to locate the source. But he writes, the Midrash states explicitly that David informed Israel that not everybody will be Torah scholars. Rather, half will engage in Torah and divine service, and half will be ordinary people. See the Ahavas Yonason on the Torah of Truma, the words Vaya'al HaMelech. Okay, people, it's 2:00. I want to thank everybody for coming out. Hope you enjoyed. Hopefully it was enjoyable and edifying. God willing, next week we'll have an air conditioner in this room or whatever, and I'll be a little bit more, just a tad more on top of it. Hopefully it was still acceptable. We still cranked out some pages. We're at page 308, and we're on our way towards moving through this book, thank God. So we're doing great. I want to wish everybody a really great day. It's nice to be back, thank God. Wonderful to be back here in Cincinnati. Please join us tomorrow night for our class in Tanakh Tuesdays, First Kings. And everything should go well for you today. Wishing you all a blessed, wonderful, uplifting day. Everything good. And Hashem should watch over everybody, as Hashem watched over me as I drove. And Baruch Hashem, thank God, made it back here and safe and sound. See you right tomorrow night at 7:30. All the best. Shmuel Plotzker signing out for Gulf Manor Synagogue and our School of Jewish Studies. Take care and be well. Bye-bye now.